M28, number 3B.
Once we have mind as the creator and producer and cause and the first and the basis, the intelligence that is at work, then we can see that only then can we get the purity of the whole thing, the reality of spirit. Because then we say only that what mind produces as ideas constitute the reality of being. We can't start and say spirit is reality when we don't know out of what reality consists of. We first have to see that mind creates all in ideas. Then we can say these ideas in spirit constitute the reality of being. They are the substance of being. How could we start with saying that spirit is substance and start there when we don't know that ideas alone are substance? Can you see what I do and how you can do it? No matter how you write it down now, at home, you have to do it all by yourself in a fresh way and in another way, because if I would start 5 minutes later again, I would say it a little bit different, but the tone would be the same. But what I want to bring home is take the time and see the bigness of going through that order, always asking, why is that order in that order as it is and not in another order? Would it be possible to put another synonymous term at another place or not? Or would it not make any more sense? That's the thing we have to culture. So that actually, finally, we feel that the order of the world, which is just one order out of those 5,040, is really that order which makes sense for defining reality. Yes, so if we have substance, and the substance and the reality of spirit, you can easily see that only then can we touch soul or the identity, the unchangeability of being. We can't start with the unchangeability of being if we don't know what is unchangeable. If we say it's the soul is unchangeable and start with that, we have a whole picture that the trees will not change and people will not change and the government will not change and the world will not change. That would be the unchangeability of soul. But when you have a basis which says, look here, we only talk about the ideas of mind, and only these ideas of mind constitute reality and substance at all. There is no other reality and substance. Then, naturally, that substance is of the nature of unchangeable identity of soul. You reason this thing out like that. Huh? And when we see that, then we can see that if we have in soul the declaration of the unchangeable identities of being, we feel now I have the definite and defined and named tools, the identities of being, the tools with which to operate. And so principle can come in and operate and can therefore systematize and classify all these identities of being. They are not yet systematized, you see. We just have them, so to say, still in an atomistic way, but clearly defined ideas. And principle comes and says, I classify them, I systematize them, I structure them, I give them the right categories. And so I can build with those ideas a system of ideas, a science of ideas. Can you hear principle? How else would we start with principle and say that God is the principle of being? And you say, oh, is that so? All right, okay, I believe you. God is the principle of being. So it's the principle of the trees and of the rats and of the atom bomb. And see, you have no basis. The basis of principle is mind, spirit, soul. We build on the wrong basis if we start with principle. In the word, not in the other orders. In the word, where we first have to build up, so to say, our true concept of what is God. What is the nature of being? I think this is very easily to be seen, once one is aware of the question. And naturally, the moment we have that whole systematization of the divine principle, systematizing the ideas of reality which have identity, can you see what I say? Systematizing the ideas, mind, of reality, spirit, that have identity, soul. The moment I do that, then I begin to see that principle operating as a system, operating must naturally bring forth constantly something new. And only then I have the newness of life. Only the divine principle operating through its own system of ideas brings forth the newness of life, brings forth individuality, divine individuality, always an individual expression of that principle. It shows that life can never be life without first standing on the shoulder of principle, so to say. Life is the outcome of the operation of principle, and because that principle operates without ever repeating itself, we have the newness of life, the individuality of life, the spontaneity of life, and so we feel that life gives us that infinite individualization of being. In other terms, how can I have a true individuality? Each one, so to say, tries to find his true individuality and would like to see the identity of his true individuality. And here we learn, don't try to do that in any human way and thinking out what your individuality is. The only true individuality you can have will be given to you by the operation of principle. By the operation of principle which stands on the signs of mind, spirit, soul. Then, therefore, we can see that in the measure as we are acquainted and at one with mind, spirit, soul, and use that as our operative principle, that in that measure we will always have to every situation a new individuality, not just one individuality. That would be limitation, that would not be the reflection of infinite life. It's only when we have infinite individuality adapted to the situation that we really express the idea of life. And by bringing forth the true individuality, we really demonstrate truth, health, form, gestalt, manhood. We are not men if we are not the operation of the divine principle through its ever newness of life. So man is not an atomistic concept and say, well, man is the compound idea, which he is. We have to know what that compound is. It's so interesting to see that the naturally Christian scientists who are earnest in their study and in reading their textbook, they are all fascinated by that statement that man is the compound idea, because it makes him feel very big, you see, if it's compound. And so he is so happy about it. And then you ask him, well, what does it mean, compound? And usually he doesn't know. He says, well, compound is compound, you know. It's together. What together? And then usually already comes to the borderline of not knowing anymore an answer. Huh? But we know it. We know that that compound idea is at the point of the sixth stage in the divine order, and therefore we see that he is the compound of all what has happened as mind producing its infinite ideas, of spirit unfolding those ideas and giving to those ideas substance in the reality of... soul or spirit? All right, that's right. And so taking those ideas of unfoldment and reality and giving them infinite identity, definiteness, names them, principle, taking those ideas and bringing in new ideas, namely relationship, ordering relationship, classification, structuring them. These are new ideas of principle which make up the system of man, the structure of man, and life coming in and say, and this structure is ever restructuring itself new. Every moment it restructures itself, it never repeats itself. So again, there is a new idea coming in and saying, this is really the form of man, the compound idea man. So if we want to know what is man, we have to know what is mind and spirit and soul and principle and life. Then we arrive at the consciousness of truth. Consciousness of truth would therefore be what? To be conscious of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life. That's the truth. Can you see? Always the next one gathers together the preceding one and gives to it a new concept, a new tone, and bringing it out through that we see that's the truth of being, and then we know that the truth of being cannot be gainsaid. It's always right. It always claims itself, affirms itself, and nothing can overthrow it, nothing can annihilate it, And then we feel, oh well, then we have arrived at the climax. Then we arrived at love of a sense. We have it. We got it. A sense of fulfillment, of perfection, gives us humanly a sense of peace and of rest. The struggle is out, is overcome, and we get the sense of the consummation of the idea. Yes? So this is the word order. Now, did I make it clear that if I would start right now again showing that order, I would use other words. But that doesn't matter. As long as I stay within that logicity of the word order. And what is necessary is not so much that you have made good notes or that you afterwards listen to the tapes and take down every word what Max has said and think, all right, the way he said it, this must be right, and so I think about it. What I wanted to say, ponder for yourself always this big question. Why could a synonymous term not stand at another place in that order? Question it, question it, question it, and think it out until that logicity of that order becomes so natural and so definite that it is as natural as if you have your 10 digits and you feel, all right, those 10 digits, if I want to have the order of addition, I can't put them into another order. I can't say 5, 3, 7, 8, 10, 2, 1. Huh? There is a logic in it which is irrevocable, and that must be seen. Think always a little bit of Hamlet. Hamlet is only Hamlet when those sentences are in the Hamlet order. If they are in a random order, it's no more Hamlet. Just think of that very simple illustration. And everybody knows that this is so. We only have not been aware that these laws that rule in any other science should also rule in spiritual science, though Mrs. Edith says so. She said, in its genesis, the science of being is stated in mathematical order, starting from the lowest and rising up to the highest, to the fullest. That's the word order. Now, we could say that this order is not just Mrs. Eddy's order, because we have seen that even those who have written the 7 days of creation must have had spiritual sense enough to listen spiritually to that song of science, to the song of the order of the word that said, I give you the melody. And just as musicians can catch inspirationally, if they are very well trained, if they are very well attuned, they can catch the melody spiritually, whereas 99.9% of the people, they have to take the line of reasoning and have to reason things out. And usually those who reason things out after a while are much more definite about it than those who take it just inspirationally. Those who play the piano by ear, they seem to be marvelous at the beginning because they can play very quickly something which somebody else can't. But there comes after a while a point where one finds out that they have come to a certain plateau and they can't get over it anymore. Whereas the one who trained himself systematically, he can break through that barrier, through that sound barrier, right through. Think of Menuhin, that he came once at that point where he could see, I have to start right from scratch again and have to learn my technique, or else I can't get any further. And so it is that we should not be unhappy that we are not belonging to that one out of a billion who has that spiritual ear like perhaps the prophets had it, that can catch things by inspiration and by revelation. That's why Mrs. Eddy has come and said, today reason and revelation are wedded, are reconciled, and that what revelation can give, I can show you through the way of divine logic. The age of science has come, and the age of science is that science that gives us the method that it can teach everybody, that everybody will know the law and will know God and will not have to ask his neighbor, tell me about God. And so we have to see that this word order has always been there. This is not an invention of Mrs. Eddy. It has pervaded the whole Bible, And it has pervaded the whole history of mankind. It has pervaded the whole evolution of the world. Everything can be seen in that order of the seven, the moment we ask the question about creative ability. For instance, you know that Matthew, who is presenting the word order of Jesus, presenting how from the Old Testament Jesus came to fulfill the law, creative ability, that therefore Matthew would show the phenomena of Jesus in the word order, and not in any other order. You know that he has those seven big stages in it, that he would first present the parent mind, and presents the parent mind through the genealogy running from Abraham right up through all the generations, right up to Joseph, and from there to Mary and Jesus, bringing out the true idea. Then you have a second big part of Spirit, where Matthew gives you the baptism of Spirit. Baptism, the purification, that he had to show that that idea which has been unfolding all through the Old Testament up to that point must be kept pure. It must be kept so pure that it is seen as an idea from God, the baptism of Spirit that came down from God. And then once he has shown that, he changes the whole subject and takes in the tone of soul, that wilderness experience, being tempted and not giving in, that he could resist sin, that he could resist temptation, that he could, so to say, fortify and strengthen his own identity in order to prove that his identity cannot be attacked, that his identity could not be hurt, that it could not be defaced. And that's the wilderness experience. That's the way they were talking. We wouldn't talk about the wilderness and so on. Then, when he has shown that, there is a definite break in the story, and then he presents the subject of principle. Namely, Matthew takes out of Jesus' life all the teaching, the fundamental teaching together, and systematizes his teaching and presents what is called the Sermon on the Mount, which is the teaching of Jesus. Principle. Principle interprets itself. Once he has shown, given the teaching, he makes a complete break from one verse to the next. Complete break. And begins to show, really, that after presenting the self-interpretation of principles through the teaching of his new gospel, that he began to show that that principle is alive, that that principle lives, and that therefore he could prove it by healing the sick and the sinner and so on. And you have one healing after the other in Matthew, just one after the other. It just brings in this healing, that healing, this healing, that healing, this marvel, that demonstration, and so on, so over a period of a few chapters, bringing in that to show that that principle is a life-giving principle. And then he breaks and begins to build up over a long period, because that's the central point of Jesus, to bring in truth by showing what constitutes the true man, the compound idea man. Man as a divine calculus of ideas. And he presents through all various stories what constitutes man. And then at the end, love, he shows with the trial, with the crucifixion, with the resurrection, and the time after resurrection, he shows the fulfillment of his whole mission. That mission that was set out in mind, that he came to fulfill the law, that mission had its complete fulfillment, and that nothing could stop that. That no powers of the world, not even the rocks that were put and the stone that were put before his grave, that no powers of the world, not the Roman power, nor the theological power, not the biological powers, that no power of the world, even if the earth was shaking, no power of the world could stop the fulfillment of the true idea. So you can see what Matthew presents is not in the first place a wonderful story of a man called Jesus. What he presents is that divine law of creativity, and shows that if anyone, not only Jesus, that if anyone would understand that law of creativity, that anyone could prove, even here and now, the fulfillment off that law. Yes. How many minutes have I left? Oh, all right. Then, yes, in 3 minutes I can take something which I would not have taken just to fill up the time. You know, we mustn't think that Jesus was a man really that belongs to a religion or to a race. He's just an example of a law. And it is interesting to see that other people would find that law too, and not only on a perhaps Christian basis. But that law must exist is seen that it pops up all over the place. For instance, I read you quickly how a mystic, a German mystic, Meister Eckhart, which you know, I'm sure, has depicted man. And I just read it in those few minutes, and you see how neatly he follows the word order. He said, he calls it 7 stages of man, the 7 steps of the new man. He says, first stage, man lives according to the model of a good and holy man. So he must have first a mental model, a mental image of the good. Second, man turns then his back to men, plural, huh? And turns towards God's face and divine wisdom. Can you see the second? Turning away, separation from the wrong and turning to the right. Third step, man is united to God. He finds his unity, his identity to God, so that God gives him joy and gladness, hear your soul, and man can no more do evil. He can no more sin. It would no more tempt him. The temptation in the wilderness were soul. Can you see how they fit? He says the 4th stage is man roots himself more and more in God, so that nothing else can move him anymore. Can you see? Rooted in principle. Brought back to principle, so that nothing can move him, no power can move him anymore. Then Meister Eckhart goes to the 5th stage and says, man lives peaceful in the richness and abundance of the highest unspeakable wisdom. Can you see the abundance and richness of life? The moment he has touched principle and be one with principle, he sees that he has the fullness of life. 6, man has forgotten his mortal life, which is actually the 5th, and is transformed into the divine image. The 6th day was that man is made in the image of God, in the divine image, when he has become God's child, the Son of God. We have always in truth the true man, the compound idea of man, Son of God. 7th, man has thus entered peace and rest. His final aim is attained, immortality. 7th stage. Yeah? Can you see that he didn't know Mrs. Eddy? He wasn't aware yet that the Bible would tell us an order, but he was a mystic that could listen and listen, and somehow even the mystics can catch the order of beings.